1, 2, 3, 4. Those are numbers, but you already knew that. If you want to know what number you're going to pay each month for your car, use Kelley Blue Book My Wallet on Auto Trader. They're really good at numbers. Auto Trader.
This episode brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Hello, welcome to the CarCast and Edmunds podcast. I'm Matt, the moderator, D'Andrea. The podcast is brought to you by our friends at BetOnline. BetOnline is your number one source for the NBA and NHL playoffs this season. Every stat, every matchup, even live odds while the games are being played. When the game's over, head on over to our online casino and get in on a game of blackjack or poker, or unwind with one of our slot games. There's over 150 slots up there. Head over to the website today and get in on the action. Don't forget to use promo code BELIEVE for 50% welcome bonus off your first deposit. It's BELIEVE. It's B-L-E-A-V for 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. It's BetOnline, where the game starts. All right. Welcome back to the show, Alistair Weaver and Jessica Caldwell. Jessica was on with us maybe about a month or so ago.
I think so. Sounds about right.
Why don't you, for those of you that might have missed that episode, remind us exactly what your job title is at Edmunds, and we can get into some of the fun statistics that you're going to be bringing with us today.
Yeah, I'm the head of insights at Edmunds. So basically, I look at the data all about the transaction of what consumers are doing out there when they're buying a car, new or used, what they're looking at on our site. That kind of gives us a inkling of what's going to happen a month, 2 months, 3 months down the road. So get ready to talk some numbers and some data.
Yeah, right on. So the thought was, where are we now as we head into the summer, certainly head into Memorial Day weekend? Are mm-hmm. we starting to see a shift in prices? When you were on last time, we were talking about the decline of valuations of cars. I know we pulled out a few, including my own truck, saying, you know, mm-hmm. $100,000 Ford Lightning's worth half as much now, which
It might be a third this week, Matt. Maybe we should redo it. I think it's probably taken another hit in the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, probably taken another hit for sure. But that doesn't mean that it's not a good time to buy. When we left last time, we talked about possibly buying used vehicles, buying for cash if you can afford it, and mm-hmm. avoiding some of the high interest rates. But we may be seeing discounts and stuff. Are we finally getting into manufacturers having discounts or rebates on new vehicles?
Yeah, we definitely are. And I think that has been the shift. I mean, we remember during the microchip shortage, there was no inventory. People were paying at or over MSRP if they could even get vehicles. That was a major issue. And this year, we've just seen incentives start creeping in. And I think the interesting thing, though, it's not across the board. I mean, there was a time in the, you know, golden days of buying a car where you would see massive incentives. 0% for 60 was nothing that anyone would write home about. It was pretty standard. But definitely we are seeing deals start to come in because, you know, really when we look across the industry, it is about affordability. People are feeling the crunch everywhere in their life. Interest rates are high. So when we look at what people are trying to buy, they are trying to buy less expensive vehicles. We see less trucks purchased right now. That happened exactly the same time that during the recession, when people started to feel the crunch, they wouldn't splurge and step up to a truck. As a result, we've seen that share dip a little bit, but deals are coming back. So if you are out there, you have been thinking about buying a car for a while, but have been hesitant, I would say it's not a bad time to start shopping. Sure, interest rates are high, but we are starting to see automakers subsidize auto loans, and that is definitely going to help.
It was really interesting, Jessica. Oh, sorry.
We're not used to doing
three people. We're gonna have to practice this, Matt. Carry on.
I mean, certainly if you're getting pre-approved from your bank or credit union mm-hmm. or something, that's certainly one way to go. But are the OEs, their financial arm, are they subsidized? Are they offering lower percentage rates than the industry standard right now? Is anybody doing, you know, like you said, 0%, 2-3% instead of 7-9% that the banks would do.
Yeah, I mean, that is the form of their incentive dollar that they are spending. So there are some deals out there, probably for not the cars that everyone are trying to get, but there are some deals out there that are 0%. And we are starting to see 0% for longer periods of time. A lot of automakers a few months ago even were saying, oh, we have 0%, but it's for 36 months. So anyone out there that's buying a $50,000, $60,000 new vehicle, which is not atypical, right now, it's like, that's a great incentive, but there's no way I can afford to pay this off in 3 years.
And the 0% would be on new vehicles. So it kind of takes away from our discussion of buying a used vehicle, right?
That's right. Yeah. I mean, you'll get the incentive for new vehicles. And a lot of times automakers will subsidize also certified pre-owned. So there's a lot of deals going around in that area too. So I think if you are looking at used, if there is an option for certified pre-owned, it may cost more than a typical used vehicle, but if there is some sort of loan deal, generally it's going to work out better for you financially.
Yeah.
The interesting thing for me looking at the data is we obviously had this world before the pandemic, then we had the pandemic and it was all about supply, even if demand was there. Now we seem to have almost gone back to the world pre-pandemic where we've got tons of supply, oversupply in certain areas, and we're going to, I know, go on to talk about 2023 cars, and we've now got manufacturers having to come on with discounts and financing everything else. But I guess the only real difference is we've now got higher interest rates than we had pre-pandemic, but the rest of the model looks pretty familiar. And I remember talking to lots of people, Joe Pado, like, we're not going back to this game. You know, we've learned our lessons. We're not going to produce too many cars. We're going to be much more controlled. It's all going to be about ordering for demand. And it feels like we're right back into some extent the bad old days.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely depends which automaker you're talking about. I think that this does exist. But, you know, if you look at some brands like Toyota, I mean, that truck is pulling up. Those cars are promised. They're out the door within days, especially the hybrids. So I think it kind of depends. I mean, inventory definitely is a lot higher than where it was. Not quite at the 3 to 4 million level that we saw pre-pandemic, but we knew that that was way, way too much. And that was pretty much across the board. But you do see some of the, you know, some automakers like Stellantis, for instance, those vehicles are sitting on the lot, you know, many of them over 100 days.
You know, I thought after the pandemic, the automakers were trying to go more toward the order model, and some even declared it. I don't remember, maybe somebody like Lincoln going, you know what, we're just not even going to carry a lot on the dealer showroom floor. We'll have a couple of models, but from there, you would order it. They wanted, now with Lincoln trying to be more of a luxury brand, they wanted sort of that bespoke process, going pick your colors, pick your options, pick your leather, sit down with somebody, touch the materials and make it more of an experience. But maybe it's not going to head in that direction for everybody like they thought.
Yeah, and I think interest rates play a big part in that. The fact that they are so much higher than they were, inflation has made everything expensive, so people have less to allocate towards their monthly vehicle, you know, spending budget. So I think it could have been more successful had this not had happened. But every automaker you talk to, even Toyota, for instance, it's like they feel the weight of these interest rates and they have to hear it from customers. And especially when you are, you know, working with someone and you got someone come in, they haven't been in the market 5 years, and all of a sudden you hit them with what the monthly payment is nowadays. I hear that there's like emotional coaching that they have to do at dealerships for some of their staff, because people are like, it's the same car, especially people that lease. They come in, the leases are $200 to $300 more, and they're like, this is the same vehicle. How could it be?
So is this actually creating a situation in the market? And I've been speaking to people in the used market as well, as saying, to your point, you come in, I'm used to my CRV being $400 a month on even if I've financed it, and suddenly I'm now in a situation where pretty much the same car 3 years on is $550, $600, and people are hanging on to their cars. So will we reach a point in the market where people have to buy? It's like, now my car's starting to fall apart. It's getting too old. It's got too many miles. I've got to get out of it and get something new. Is that... Are we seeing a dynamic at the moment where people just said, I'm going to stay put? It's a bit like the housing market, isn't it? I'm just going to stay put and see what happens.
Yeah. Unlike housing, we can't stay put sometimes, because yes, we have seen that. And that is the change that we saw in the first quarter of this year. Trade-ins for both new and used are older than they have been over the past few years. So I think what that means is that people have been sitting on the sidelines thinking this is, you know, this is crazy between the inventory issues and the incentive rates and, or interest rates. Like I've been set out, but I think they're hitting a point where either a life stage has changed or they are, you know, they're sick of paying for repairs and maintenance and they just need something new. So, you know, a lot of times people have to jump into the car market, whether they like it or not. And it feels like we're seeing more of those customers. They probably are a bit smarter because they know that, you know, they haven't come in for a reason, but in the same token, you know, we're seeing trade-ins quite old. And if you haven't been in the market for 9 years, again, it's going to be a harsh reality with what's happening right now.
Do we know that the average life of a car with a particular customer, how long did they hold on to a car before, you know, maybe 5 years ago versus now? Because it felt like because of so many leases, mm-hmm. it's 3 to 5 years, maybe you hold on to a car. And now it feels like it's going quite a bit more than that.
Yeah, I mean, leasing was about 30% of the retail market before the pandemic, and it went down really low, and it's still a lot lower. It's about 24% right now. A lot of that is EVs, interestingly enough. EVs lease north of 60%, about 68% right now. So yeah, you have those people in the market that are coming back every, you know, every few years. But yeah, generally speaking, when we see trade-ins, usually that bops around from like 5 to 7 years, usually around... You can count on that people will come back generally like in a 6-year span. And that definitely runs the gamut. I mean, they're the people that hold and they're going to drive forever. But a lot of people get antsy and they want a new car because they see all the technology. And that's why the loan terms can get so dangerous when people start to finance for 84 months. Because the reality is a lot of people don't want to keep their car for that long. And, you know, they end up underwater on their loan.
And particularly in a world at the moment where things are changing so fast, technology is interesting. I got into a Mercedes GLB this week and I remember it coming out 3 or 4 years ago. And it was like, hey, this is really like cutting edge. It's really interesting. And we all got into it on Monday at the test track and we say, this thing feels really old. You know, the technology, the interface, even down to like the plastics and the design is like, whoa, this thing's 4 years old and it feels like a different generation. It's crazy how fast things are moving on. And I was just looking up some of the data, Jessica, here, like, and I suppose to move the conversation on where the opportunities are, if you're looking at 2023 model year stock, there's some fantastic bargains. I was looking at this. Dodge has got 52.6% of their vehicles are still 2023 model year. And at this time of year, we'd normally be expecting that transition to be over. Chrysler 38%, Buick 17%, Ford 15%, Lincoln 13%, even Mercedes 8%. You know, there's got to be some good deals to be done.
Yeah, I mean, definitely. So you look across the board and the average discount for 2023 is a little over $4,000, but it does vary by brand because like you'd said, you could be looking for a Dodge and there are tons of 2023s, deep discounts. But on the same token, you're looking at someone like, you know, a Honda or a Subaru, you're not going to get much. Those vehicles, they're sold out already. But, you know, you had mentioned Mercedes. There's a lot of, I'd say, good deals there. I've been hearing too, people trying to get their hands on some of the EQ vehicles. I mean, in fact, if you could get an EQS SUV, if you're, you know, buying that, I've seen the discounts are averaging around $25,000 this month from what we've seen in some of our transaction data. Similarly with the EQS, just the sedan, about $23,000, the EQE SUV, $20,000. So if you can get your hands on, like the percentage for Mercedes 2023s is not as high as what we see at Dodge. But if you can get your hands on one of those, I think you're in line for a pretty good deal.
Some of the deals that we're seeing on, particularly lease deals on, you know, things like Hyundai Ioniq 5s, Hyundai Ioniq 6. The Ioniq 6 is a fantastic product, but nobody seems to want it. Are amazing. And we had Audi in the office the other week, and they were saying on their EVs, because the way the tax credit works, they're now at 90% lease. It was interesting, you're saying 60-odd% overall, but a luxury brand like Audi, 90% is lease. And I guess that means in 3 years' time, we're also going to have quite a different market because you're going to have a flood of EVs hitting the market.
But wouldn't the Audi customer in general be more of a leasing customer than compared to, say, a Ford or Chrysler?
Yeah, I mean, generally the luxury brands do lease at a higher rate, but I mean, still, I think with such a, the deals for EVs, I would say, are so good. It really behooves me, like, why anyone maybe would choose not to lease them. I mean, just think about applying that federal tax credit, unless you're buying one that's so expensive that the $7,500 isn't really going to make a big difference, but spread over the course of a 3-year loan, it is, it is a sizable savings, I'd say.
Yeah.
And what we should say is, sorry, Matt, just to jump in for a second, I think what we should say, just for anybody listening who doesn't really, you know, without getting too much into the nitty gritty, if you lease an EV, then you basically get, I mean, it's up to the manufacturer, but they're all giving it away. You basically are able to bake the $7,500 discount into the lease. Whereas if you buy, there are a whole bunch of criteria that it opens up to do with personal income, where the vehicle's made. There's a whole bunch of criteria that you have to hit, which is why this whole leasing thing has become basically a loophole that, you know, Hyundai managed to help negotiate with Washington. So it's a super, that's what's driving it, but it's going to have such a compound impact on the market for the years to come.
Right. And the fact that you had mentioned that you're giving the IONIQ 5 and 6 your stamp of approval, we've seen some massive discounts for them too. For anyone shopping the 2023 vehicles at Alstair likes, the discounts there are running around $9,000 on average. So you can definitely get a good deal there. But I think, you know, Ram, Jeep, Dodge, I definitely would jump into the market now and take a look if you're interested in those.
Why?
Seriously, IONIQ 6 is a fabulous car. I mean, yeah,
it's ugly. Stop bringing it up. It's an ugly car. I just saw another one the other day and I was like, stop looking at this car. I know you like this car, but this car is ugly. But I think that first of all, the Kia EV9, which you guys do like, and I do like, and I think is a sharp looking, you know, EV three row SUV. I'm starting to see them on the road, and that's something that's brand new. And I think there's massive discounts already on that.
I mean, I think when you look across the whole EV spectrum, there's pretty big discounts across the board, no matter what it is you're looking at. I mean, I've seen some, I mean, if you're looking at, I'm sorry, Matt, to bring this up, but the Ford F-150 Lightning, you know, I've heard like 0% APR plus $10,000 off, and the dealers are still having a hard time in some cases getting this vehicle to move. And it's a tough one, I'm sure. I don't want to.
The Lightning Facebook groups were all bragging the other day about how the sales, I think, for the last quarter beat, of course, Cybertruck and Rivian and whatever. And I was like, I know, but there's just not a lot of competition. Like the Ram's not really out. They're EV. The Silverado, I think, is just now coming out. I think you guys just got your hands on it, but I don't even know if it's for sale yet.
We drove the Silverado last week and the reviews have been pretty mixed. We weren't massively impressed with it, but also it's $100,000.
Yeah.
You know, by the time you get it into what you might call a kind of consumer spec rather than it's the best part of $100,000. And you just look at it and think, who is going to buy this? And, you know, Lightning got in with some early adopters and it was quite trendy and fashionable for a while. And we were thinking about buying one for the long-term fleet. We're not going to go ahead because we just don't think the level of interest is there to justify it. And so if they're going to have to start incentivizing from the off, you know, I mean, the fundamental problem in the market right now is vehicles are too expensive. EVs particularly have been too expensive. And this is now creating this sort of crux point. And it will be fascinating to see how it plays out. But we're also hearing, of course, like, it's not like the manufacturers are pulling in enormous profits on EVs. We know that they're not.
That's what I was going to bring up, is I think the shock here, the shell shock for the manufacturers is that EVs are significantly more costly to make. And we don't want to pay extra for them. So, because we're kind of accustomed to, you know, like you said, especially when you're trying to sort of repurpose a vehicle name or a vehicle mark of sorts, like F-150 and Silverado, going, this is a $40,000 truck, you know, maybe 40 to 60. And now you're asking us $100,000 because you took the engine out and put an electric motor in it. And like, it's not really like adding up. And I think Ford has been more successful with the Lightning because they were willing to take that financial hit, which now is catching up to them. Whereas with Silverado just coming out now and you guys just testing it, I don't think GM has the luxury of going, hey, yeah, you know, it's an expensive truck and we need to, you know, they need to make money on it. I don't think they have the option to not really make money off it. They can't offer of $30,000 cash back incentive on that truck. It's too expensive.
The interesting car that we drove, not only the Silverado, but also the Equinox EV. And if you factor in the 7.5 tax credit on that, you're getting under $30,000, $27,500, something like that. Now, that actually we're actually really impressed by that car. And I think this is what the market is crying out for, is actually real world. I mean, it's quite small, but real world workable EVs at a price that people can actually afford. You know, we're seeing the Volvo come into the market. We've got the Chevy now. We just need more of them. And hopefully that transition. Jessica, the other flip side of all these EV discounts and everything else is the fact, and you know, Tesla price cuts and what have you, all this kind of shakeup in the market. If I drop my microphone, all the shakeup in the market is, if you're a used shopper right now, the fact that the bottom has fallen out of the market for residual values for EVs actually potentially makes them an interesting choice. And cars that seemed out of reach are now suddenly appear much more affordable on the face of it.
Yeah, and I think that this what gives us interesting insight into, if EVs are cheap, will people buy them? So I think it's a bit of a struggle, because if you look right now, a $25,000 Tesla does exist. It's the Model 3. It's used. It's a 2021 model year. But they are pretty inexpensive at this point. You look across the gamut, and no matter what EV you are shopping, everything from a Porsche Taycan to that Model 3, things are heavily discounted. And especially when you look at just where they were a few years ago. And I think it was in the summer of 2022, a Model Y, like a used one that was, granted it was a 2021 model year, so it wasn't that used as it is today, was selling for over $71,000. And now it's about $31,000. So it's just that price jump, I think, that we have seen for used EVs that have made them affordable. But, I'd say that there's a lot of risks too. I think it's fun to think, oh, I'm going to get like a cooler car than maybe I could afford just a few months ago. But again, looking at the lease deals for new, does it make sense to buy used, especially if you need a loan for that vehicle? We know that used loans are over 11% on average, about 11.6% on average. So financially, does it make sense to buy the used EV versus leasing a new one? You don't have to do the numbers, but I'd say that it's probably pretty close.
Well, you got to think,
I suppose,
about
the one thing about back. Sorry, Matt, you go ahead.
I was going to say, you got to think about the quality of the car as well, and mm-hmm. the amount of research you should put into selecting that vehicle. Getting a new car comes with a warranty and some accountability, if you will, where a used car, certainly something that's not certified pre-owner, no warranty attached. Mm-hmm. Are you buying a car that's cheap because it's not a desirable car anymore and you can get a good price, or is it just not a good car? I mean, we were just looking up a minute ago, the BMW i3, which you had mentioned earlier, Alistair. You're right. I'm seeing some, with, 50, 60,000 miles on them for $15,000, $15,000, $16,000. That seems fairly inexpensive to me. And you're getting into a funky little BMW. But is a 2017, 18, or 19 BMW i3 junk? Is it like, just because it's 15 grand, doesn't mean should you buy it?
There's two things at play. I mean, if you take the i3 as an example, that had very specific tires, and the tires aren't that easy to come by. So that's, one factor. The Teslas are interesting because obviously a lot of over-the-air updates, Ford Mach-E as well. It's a bit like an iPhone. You change your iPhone, you don't really notice a difference because the software is kept updating. But there obviously comes a point where there are significant firmware or hardware updates. Tesla's obviously just updated the Model 3. The new version is significantly better than the old one in lots of ways, comfort, convenience, blah, blah, blah. But we're also seeing a lot of manufacturers taking more of a leap in the mid-cycle facelift than they would historically. So going back to the Audi A4 e-tron example, or the Porsche Taycan, it's got better charging, better range, better driving dynamics. And one of the questions we put to both Porsche and Audi was, well, what's this going to do to the residual value to the outgoing one? Because mid-cycle facelift tended to be, like a new nose job and a new lick of paint and, not a lot more. This is actually quite fundamental engineering. And their answer was, yeah, it's a problem. I mean, Audi said the good thing is we didn't actually sell that many of the old A4 e-tron. So, it's not going to have that much impact. But you're right, Taycan prices have come down. because the new Taycan is actually, you know, one of the facts is the new Taycan is actually quite a significant step. So the technology is moving so fast that the OEMs are having to say, well, just to compete in the marketplace, we need to fit the fastest charging, the better range.
Yeah.
And so the older three-year vehicles, in a lot of cases, aren't that great. The Model 3 and the Model Y are a little bit different because they haven't made the seismic leap until right now with the updated 3.
But again, you're kind of talking about the technology and stuff of it and how it's sort of keeping up. And when I'm shopping for a used vehicle, yes, things like charging speeds for an EV would be relevant. But for me, it would be more about the cost of ownership. Like you mentioned, the i3 has specific tires that could be expensive. That's what would irritate me the most. So if I said, hey, I'm going to save $25,000 by getting a used Model 3, that's worth it to me, even if it has slower charging speeds, for example, but not if it's always out of alignment and it eats through tires and it has electronic bugs and it's going to cost me a fortune to fix that thing because it's out of warranty and who knows how to fix it outside of Tesla, you know, or right. BMW for that matter.
And their service department has notoriously been having issues. I mean, Elon Musk has been very aggressive with some of the headcount cuts. People don't know really what the future holds for, you know, so attention to service, also the supercharger network that's in jeopardy. There doesn't seem to be much of an expansion to that as well. And also the other thing about Tesla is that they have not been very organized about their product changes. I mean, unlike mainstream automakers that, you know, have these scheduled changes, it feels like Tesla just changes these vehicles when they want. So what exactly are you getting? Do you know? And I heard a funny comment from someone who had said, yeah, I want to get a used Model 3 for cheap, but how do I find one that wasn't built in the parking lot? I want one that was built in the factory. So I was like,
oh, you mean when they used to do that tent?
There was He said, I don't want the one built in the tent. And I was like, I don't know what to tell you.
Yeah, that's a good point. I don't want a parking lot Tesla. I want one of the factory Teslas.
I want one built in the factory. I feel like that's a very small ask.
Yeah. Huh. I don't know. Guess you got to pick the years that
that's
they
like
that.
Reminds me of what my used to say. I don't want a Friday.
Oh, I think we lost
before, like a Friday afternoon car when everybody just you lost me.
I'm sure all your jokes are fabulous, but we lost you for all of that. So
you lost me. Am I back now?
Yeah, I think you are. Hold on one second. Let's just take a quick break. Let this thing settle for a second, and we'll be right back.
This episode brought to you by Progressive. Whether you're driving, cooking, or doing laundry, Progressive knows the podcasts you listen to go best when they're bundled with another activity. Much like how their Progressive home and auto policies go best when they're bundled. Having these two policies together makes taking care of your insurance easier and could help you save too. Customers who save by switching their home and car insurance to Progressive save over $775 on average. That's a whole lot of savings and protection for your favorite podcast listening activities, like going on a road trip, cooking dinner, and even hitting the home gym. Yep, your home and your car are even easier to protect when you bundle your insurance together. Find your perfect combo. Get a home and car insurance quote at Progressive.com today. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $779 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states.
Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you sell everywhere, from their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system. Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. What I love about Shopify is how no matter how big you want to grow, Shopify gives you everything you need to take control and take your business to the next level. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/westwoodone, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/westwoodone now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/westwoodone.
All right. How do we do? Can you hear us? Can you hear us?
I'm back. I was funnier than I've ever been before, but sadly nobody heard it.
Nobody heard it. It's now you got to go back and tell the joke again.
No, I've lost the timing. It's all about timing.
That's what happens all the time. You lose the timing on it. But yeah, so it kind of brings up the, you know, how here's another question. So, and I don't mean this as just a plug for Edmunds, but what advice would you give on researching a used car to figure out what used cars are a decent deal because maybe they're outdated versus what used cars are a decent deal but may cost you more in the long run? I mean, you can look at some of the long-term tests that Edmunds has done, which is still kind of tough because some of these cars haven't been out too long. So we kind of need to look at even how you guys do the long-term test. Now, I know you guys kind of jam 2 to 3 years of ownership into 1 year of actual ownership. You put 30,000 miles on a car in 12 months to sort of push through it and give us an idea. But is there something else we should be looking for? How do we do the research in that?
I think there's two answers to that question. One, I think that it sort of applies in two ways. You're right. I mean, the long-term program is it doesn't, we haven't necessarily got 5-6 years of data. One thing, going back to the 23 model year stuff, if people are looking, maybe we'll deal with that question first. If people want to are looking at that market, one thing we do have in Edmunds is if you go to the, if you search for make model on Edmunds, you will actually be, we'll actually give you an update on what's changed for 2024. Because sometimes you'll look at a vehicle and the difference between a 2023 and a 2024 is, you know, they've introduced a new shade of green and not much else. Sometimes it's actually a little bit more fundamental because they're doing this not quite a full sometimes it's a full refresh, sometimes it's a new car in entirety, sometimes there's done more than simply a new paint job. I think about things like some of the Volkswagens have introduced bigger screens, that kind of thing. So if you go and research the model on Edmunds, we will actually give you an indication as to whether the 2023 is actually any different to 24. And if it's not, then it's probably worth a punt, but I think that's a really important consideration that you might, that information might be sometimes difficult to come by.
And, you know, we're talking about maybe going out over the weekend or even over the summer, but there was kind of a thought, maybe this is just sort of an outdated thought, that you would go and sort of shop for a new car toward the end of the year, October, November, December, because new models, those next year models are coming onto the lot, and the earlier, you know, like you're saying, the 23 models in this case would be less expensive. But we're kind of seeing cars being rolled out sort of throughout the year now. It's more like, you know, TV shows on streaming services where like the normal fall season doesn't really apply anymore, or you know, musicians dropping songs throughout the year instead of an entire album at a certain point. Is that still, does that seem like the case? It's kind of happening throughout the year. Is there a good time to buy or a bad time to buy?
Well, I mean, I do think that consumers are conditioned to think that. I mean, end of the summer, you're thinking, oh, yep, this is when the tents go up and the hot dogs at dealerships or the, you know, the balloon ties out front. So a lot of that is about perception, but I do think that because vehicles are kind of introduced at different various times, it doesn't actually apply as much. But when we do look at some of the deals, if you can get at the end of the model year, like right now that what we are seeing, you can generally get a, you know, a better deal. But I think right now it really kind of comes down to, is the vehicle incentivized? Is there something that I can get that will just make it, you know, less expensive. But yeah, in terms of like that kind of end of the model year, it shifts, but it does exist to a degree, but probably not, doesn't stack up to what I think our perception of it is.
Yeah. It used to be like all the auto shows were sort of packed around that November through January time. And now people don't really go to auto shows quite as much. So it's a little less relevant because now cars get, you know, even the higher end cars, they get sort of released throughout the year, depending on events. It could be like Goodwood or Monterey, or, you know, even a RenSport or CES or something like that. Like cars are popping up all over throughout the year now.
I think the other thing, going back to EVs for a moment, why, and I think Jessica's absolutely right. There's this sort of conundrum between buying used a cheap, you know, depending on the financing and everything else. The one thing that we should say, to sort of balance the argument a little bit, is all our data shows that battery life is not a big factor. So it's not like an iPhone. We talked about this before on the show. It's not like an iPhone where I have to, like, you know, this is nearly 2 years old. It's junk. You know, I have to charge it six times a day. It is not like your phone. And actually, the battery degradation after 3 years on something like a Tesla is pretty minuscule. Minuscule enough that you wouldn't really notice. So there are considerations down the line if you're going to keep it another 5 years and suddenly it's 8 years old or 10 years old and it's starting to get out of battery warranty and things like that. So there are considerations. But one thing to bear in mind is you're not going to suddenly end up in a world where, you know, your car doesn't go as far as you thought it would. Mm-hmm. So, you know, and I'm also into the sort of psychological dynamic. For a lot of people, an EV makes sense as a second car because, you know, if you need long distances, infrastructure, etc., then actually you're tending to probably going to take the gas car on the road trip. But most people in America, a lot of families in America, have two vehicles. So actually a cheaper EV, for particularly in urban areas, might make a lot of sense for people, particularly if you can charge it from home. So just to sort of caveat some advice, like, you need to go in with your eyes open and do your research. But it is an interesting time where perhaps, you know, we do 6,000 miles a year in our EV because we live in LA. And yeah, we do 6,000 miles a year, but we spend a lot of time in the car. And it makes sense for us in an urban area. But so, you know, I think all those considerations that you might not have thought about before, you know, become relevant.
So a question that would come up would be, and this would be an interesting test for you guys at some point, if you haven't done this already, maybe we just haven't talked about it yet, would be, are the miles less relevant on an EV car? Certainly there's moving parts, but fewer moving parts than a typical gas engine car. Where we find used cars, we typically try to find them, I don't know, people have their different rule of thumb, under 80,000 miles, under 60,000 miles, you know, because they get in their head, well, how long am I going to hold it for? Somewhere around that 100,000 mile mark, we start to get itchy and going, I need to get rid of this thing. I feel like something's going to happen to it now. So is that the same thought on EVs? And then when do we get to see a test where you just try to gather up 100,000 mile plus EVs from various manufacturers and test the batteries, test the charging rate and see what, you know, what happened to those cars? Is there much of a change?
We actually have a lot of that data. We have a partnership with a company called Recurrent, and a lot of this is actually surfaced on the Edmunds site, which actually shows that was really where my reference to battery degradation comes from. They have a lot of data on EVs out on the road, and you know, you don't get this big drop off. One of the things their data is showing is it's less about miles and more about time. So, for example, a 7, 8, 9 year old Nissan Leaf, an early Nissan Leaf, is probably, even with low mileage, it's probably seen a significant drop off. Whereas a 60,000 mile 3 year old Tesla Model 3 is probably pulling the same range or nearly the same range that it would have done when it's new. So it's a slightly different mindset. Actually, years seems to have a bigger bearing, particularly as technology has changed, than miles. I don't know whether you've seen some of that data, Jessica.
Yeah, I mean, I think though, for the average consumer, and we see this always come up in when we survey folks about EVs, is that battery longevity is a top concern. It's usually number two right after price. So we say all these things, we try to say that, and the data that Recurrent has is really great, but it has to be filtered down to the mass market consumer, because that really is the next phase of EV buyers beyond the early adopters. So I think that's probably a good education piece for, you know, for automakers or even dealers to kind of tell consumers that this is maybe not, and really bringing to life some of this data about battery testing, because a lot of consumers still think that is, you know, that's going to end their EV shopping journey, as the battery won't last. And I don't like that.
It's interesting that you bring that up. And like I said, I'm in a couple of different groups, and having a Ford Lightning, so many people in that group are so strict on not charging the battery more than roughly 80%. And they're like, that's the only way it's going to survive. And then every once in a while, some guy will chime in and go, I got 30,000 miles on my truck. I charge it to 100% every time. And I'm looking at the data. There's no degradation. And then people just get mad at them and go, you're wrong. Just wait it out. You're going to get punished for charging to 100%. And there's nobody's citing any real data. And so whatever, however it got out there, that 80% is what you should charge for, seems to be kind of written in stone now. But where's the data saying that's what it needs to be? And if that is what it needs to be, then why do we care about cars that go 300 miles? Why don't we just say, well, 80% charge, this is the real range of the vehicle, because nobody even cares about 100% anymore.
There is quite a lot of data to support the argument that's also why you start to see charging curves start to tail off. I mean, if you look at the Edmunds EV charging test, edmunds.com/charging, then there's quite a bit on this here. And you start to see that's why you get to 80% and actually the charging tails off and it gets much slower. There's also a lot of nuances. And again, this is where, to Jessica's point, the education bit becomes so difficult. If you're plugging in at home for what we call a level two charger, it's quite a different dynamic to if you're charging with a fast charger, you know, 350 kilowatts or whatever. So there's all these nuances at play. I mean, the general rule of thumb from pretty much every OEM is lined up around this is that you want to run your battery up to about 80% typically, and then charge to 100% for road trips. Because A, it takes, certainly on a fast charger, it takes a lot longer to charge after above 80%. And also there is evidence that I'm no scientist, but the way the battery cells and electrons work is it can have a longer term impact. So that the general rule of thumb is do that. But you're right. If you need that 100% for the road trip, it's not going to kill your car.
Yeah. And then, like you said, charging speeds. Now we start to go, well, what's worse, charging to 100% or close to it on a regular basis, or using a fast charger up to that 80% on a regular basis? We don't know. I don't know which one would harm the battery the most in the long term.
The sensible way to do it is to basically treat it like your iPhone, charge at home, charge to 80% every night. So if your car's got, let's say, 300 miles, 80%, what's that, 240 or something? You know, realistically, you're unlikely to be doing 240 miles a day. You know, you do your daily commute, you come in, you plug it in. Then you go into your bedroom and you plug your iPhone in. It's the same dynamic. And if you do that, you'll never really think about any of these things. And then the one time a year or the two times a year where you go on that little road trip, then you plug it into 100%. Yeah. You make sure it's charged to 100%, fast charge on the way. That's both from a fiscal perspective, that's the best way to run an EV. And also think about where you're charging, because you want to be charging at lower electricity costs at home. Most of your onboard systems, you know, your Edison or whatever it may be, will inform you when to charge. So there is a learning curve. And I'm starting very California here. I've started to learn to surf again, despite my aging body. And my sister was like, I want an EV. And then I was like, right, okay, well, get a charger at home. So, I rent. Can I do that? And so there's all this kind of world of, it sounds like a hassle. The reality is it's probably less of a hassle than you think once you've done your research and made that step.
But to Jessica's point is we don't have enough information out to the consumer. It's just not getting out there quick enough. Like you said, I plug in my iPhone. I put my iPhone on a little stand, and every night after a little while, it comes up and says, I forgot the exact wording. It's basically saying, we're going to trickle charge your iPhone. It'll be fully charged at 5:30 in the morning, because that's my pattern. And that's supposed to save, you know, improve the life of the battery. So as you mentioned, Taycan, you know, these car companies are rushing to get us improved battery technology that allows us to take a charge faster. But the reality is they don't, for the longevity, they want you to charge your battery to less and as slow as possible is basically what they're saying. Like, if you want you're like, hey, well, you could charge your Taycan in 7 minutes now, but we don't recommend it. You should charge it as slow as possible to 80% if you really want to keep that car for 10 years, you know? So it's kind of, it's a weird thing, but I guess it's kind of the same going, hey, listen, you know, every time you drive your gas engine car, should you floor it at every single stoplight and go to red line, or should you, you know, shift at 2200 RPM and try to baby it and save some gas and wear and tear on the engine? I guess it's kind of the same idea. I don't know, but
so
that's the issue with. Oh, go ahead.
So go, Jessica, go.
Oh, I was going to say, this is the issue with, I think, the off Hertz rental Teslas, is that people are thinking about it. They're like, do I really? I mean, yeah, those are very cheap vehicles, but if it has been fast charged the whole life of it, because it's basically what you're describing. I'm going on a trip. I have rented this car. I don't care how it's charged. I just want it to be as quick as possible. I think that's when you have to be careful. And there's probably a lot of people quite weary about, you know, those vehicles. And hence we see those values, which are pretty low.
Yeah. Boy, that was a financial bumble for them, wasn't it?
you're right. And if you're leasing it, I know it should sound cynical, but if you're leasing it, who cares?
Yeah.
Yeah. If you're not going to buy out the lease, not my problem.
I mean, this is why these values are not great for EVs.
Right. But that's also kind of the comfort for the consumer in leasing any vehicle, is a little less worry overall. It's like, I'm leasing it, I'm going to give it back, I'm a little less concerned about it. If I go a few extra miles before that oil change or whatever, I'm a little less worried about it.
That's why buying EV use versus leasing, I think, is good for, you know, someone that just wants to dip their toe into the EV world. If you lease it, you know, no commitment in 3 years, give it back. The value degradation, someone else's issue at that point. And, you know, maybe you can continue EV, maybe you don't, but it's a bit, you know, low risk.
Yeah.
There is a sort of real irony here, because I'm on my third EV lease as a family. We've gone BMW i3, Tesla Model 3, Genesis GV60. And when we handed the Tesla back, I was livid because the pandemic, we'd only done 10,000 miles over 3 years. And I think when we handed it back to Tesla, it had something like $15,000 of positive equity in it.
Yeah.
And Tesla uniquely won't allow you to buy out the car. So I was kind of livid back then, because I was like, I'm pretty much giving it back to them. And, you know, this thing's, I've taken a massive haircut. Now on the Genesis, I'm probably actually quids in, or, you know, actually probably making money, although my leases, I got a decent lease deal. And, you know, if the residuals have dropped out lower than what they calculated. So it's a tough game. I never imagined leasing a vehicle, but actually I think in the EV market, particularly partly because of the tax credit and partly because the technology is changing so fast, it does make a lot of sense if you can get a good deal. And frankly, at the moment, there's some really good deals. There you go. Sensible consumer advice.
There you go. Is that going to be the takeaway for today? It sounded like we made it sound like EVs are a disaster.
I don't think that's the case. I think I think you lease, if you're leasing a new EV today, there are some fantastic products available at a, you know, genuinely competitive price. I'm sure there's a lot of manufacturers taking a haircut on them and having a tough time, you know, leasing them at the rates that they are. But from a consumer perspective, you know, there are definitely deals to be done. And to Jessica's point, you know, used car values for the EV market, it's an interesting conundrum. And then if you're buying gas or even buying EV, 2023 cars, as long as you're not getting into a situation where 2023 cars being replaced by an all new model or something significantly different, there's bargains to be had. Right now, it's if you're a shopper, right, you know, this is the first time in what, 3 years, 4 years that it's you're saying actually now it's a buyer's market. Is that fair, Jessica?
I think it's fair, as long as you're not financing, unless you're
yes.
I think that's where it becomes not the buyer's market, but a lease is obviously something very different, especially for EVs. But yes, if this is your interest, go for it. It's probably a pretty good time to go for it.
And if you are financing, look for those deals.
Right. For those manufacturers to sort of supplement those interest rates and sort of offset those interest rates.
Right.
And I know we focus a lot on EV because it's the new thing. And there's a lot of questions around how to buy used EV. But like you said, Alistair, this all sort of applies to gas engine hybrid cars as well, as far as if you're shopping for used or even shopping for a discounted 23 model. They're out there. You got to look around, but they're out.
That's the tough one, to find actually a good deal on a plug-in hybrid or a lot of hybrids. That's, you know, it's classic supply and demand. There's a lot of people are looking at markets saying, I'm not quite ready for an EV, or I don't feel that I'm ready for an EV, even if actually I am. And so I'm going to go down the hybrid route. And I talk to all my neighbors here and they're all saying, oh, I'm going to get a hybrid, or I'm going to get a plug-in hybrid. I'm like, why? Well, just feels like the right moment to do that.
Toyota's kind of laughing their way to the bank on all this, right? Because Toyota's basically just been touting hybrid the whole time.
Yeah, I mean, he was definitely right about the hybrid being the bridge to EVs, because I think what Alistair said is what I hear all the time, is that I want to look like I care about environmental sustainability and I'm going green, but EV is just too much of a hassle I can't take on, so I'm going to go buy a hybrid. And as a result, I mean, hybrids, talk about not getting a deal. You're not going to get a deal if you're looking for a hybrid. That just doesn't exist. And you may not even get your hands on one. And we look at how fast they sell. I mean, significantly faster than the industry at large. And, you know, just talking to a Toyota dealer yesterday, it's like those vehicles, they come to the dealership, they've already been promised. If there's a few left over, they're gone in a day or two. All they have is a list. They call people and they're sold. It's hard.
2 years ago, we were sitting on this show saying, "Oh, where's Toyota and Honda with all their fancy EVs?" it's like, okay, maybe the was it the Kaizen approach has some merit after all.
It'll switch again. Something will change again, and then.
It's a fascinating time. The other thing is, you've got to remember this is a global market, and although we're not seeing Chinese cars here, we are very much in Europe and the rest and a lot of the rest of the world. And Europe, a lot of legislation is leading towards have to have a hybrid or have to have a plug-in. So, although there are a lot of vehicles that are specific to the US, there's also a lot of vehicles that are global. And so, I think this train has left the station. It's just a question of like how fast things take. And maybe my own view is we'll see a lot more hybridization for longer than perhaps we're anticipating a couple of years ago. But
Yeah.
what do I know?
I don't know. All right. You want to wrap it up there? Are we,
Oh,
what else are we
well,
missing?
on
Yeah, go
2023
ahead.
deals, if anyone just wants to get really fancy, we are still seeing a lot of Maseratis that are 2023, about 44%. And if you want a, I'm going to butcher the name, apologize to all Italian speakers, Grecale, I think that's how you say it, Grecale.
Yeah.
I mean, those are pretty cheap right now. I think the discount is averaging around $18,000. Not a lot being sold, but you know, if you want to get fancy this summer, maybe now is a good time.
And actually, that's a pretty new car, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's yeah. Interesting times.
I just started to see a couple of the new the small Maserati SUV. And for the life of me, I can't remember the name of it now. What's the little Maserati SUV? Come on, Alistair.
I'm having a brain fade as well.
This is literally your job to know the
This
name of
is
the
literally my job.
Maserati
No,
SUV.
the Grecale is it? Pam, the Grecale is the smaller one, Matt. The Grecale is the Taycan rival.
And
That's
then
why I was saying it's the new car.
what's the
And then you have the bigger.
Levante? I'm not going to say any more
And then
Italian
you have the
names.
Levante is the larger one.
Yes,
Yeah.
that's the one I was thinking of.
So that was my point.
Yeah,
Yeah.
you're right. Nobody knows what the other one is, the small one. But you're right. I guess so. There's some good deals there. Go
No,
get yourself a new
the Grecale
Maserati.
is the small one that sits alongside the Taycan.
And Alfa Romeo has a sister version, right? I don't know. It hasn't been on our radar in a while. Like,
The
what's going on with
Stelvio.
Stelvio? No,
The
there's a new
Stelvio.
smaller one.
Yeah.
I don't
Well, in
know.
the Tonale, which is the small Alfa.
Maybe
The
that's it.
Tonale.
Tonale. Yeah. All right. Well, there you go.
Tonale.
Guys, thanks so much for all the wonderful information and all the wonderful stats. Jessica, always a pleasure to have you on. We're gonna have to do this again, probably at the end of the summer when you say stop shopping for new vehicles and just go get 24 vehicles because the 25s are coming out or whatever however the market's gonna shift in the next 6 months. We'll see how it goes. All right, so edmunds.com is the website, and we'll throw this up on YouTube as well. You guys can find it there. We'll throw some links up to our channels and social media. Is there anything else that we're missing? What else is coming up? What you guys got going on? You got videos you're doing,
Just
Alistair?
trying to think, we've got a wrap up, about to launch our wrap up of the GT500, which we were supposed to keep for a year and then end up keeping for several, for various reasons. So that's well worth a watch. And if you haven't seen it, we did a hybrid test of the CR-V and RAV4. That's and then Camry, the Camry Accord, and Elantra film is still doing really well on YouTube. So a good mix. If you go to our YouTube channel, a good mix of a bit of fun and also some really solid comparison tests.
Sounds good. All right, guys. Thanks so much. Until next time, keep the air in the spare and the bag in the wheel.
Whether you're a morning person or a bedtime procrastinator, everyone deserves a mattress that works for their style. And you'll find the best mattress for you at Ashley. The new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley brings you one-of-a-kind body-conforming technology, making every sleep tailored to be your best. The collection also features cool-to-the-touch covers and motion absorption to help minimize sleep disruptions from partners, pets, or kids. Shop the all-new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.